Business Unusual, separating economic facts from fiction.
Imisebenze mihle ebhadalo kuhle ukufunda okuhle singakuthola njani izibhedlela ezisebenzayo lezisebenzi ezijabulayo indawo zokuhlala ezilungileyo
Ngasibambaneni ukwakha iZimbabwe elimisebenzi emihle ku-mining, manufacturing, agriculture, imfundo yomuntu wonke, izibhedlela esilemithi eneleyo, izindlu zokuhlala esilamanzi ahlanzekileyo lamagetsi, ukudla okwaneleyo nokuvikelwa komuntu wonke. IZimbabwe elesivuno esihle emasimini, lama-industry akhula esiya phambili. Gasifakela amakhanda ndawonye sakhe isizwe somuntu wonke esilamathuba alinganayo esingelabuyanga. Umbiko lo liwulethelwa ngabe Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe.
Good evening, Zimbabwe, and welcome to Business Unusual on ZFM Stereo. I am Anis Masambu. It's Wednesday, the 1st of October, 2025, and we begin a brand new month with the premium edition of the show, Business Unusual, where we are looking at breaking down key business stories, trends, analysis shaping our economy. Tonight's episode is a special, proudly in association with the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, LEDRIST, and please do stay tuned. We are looking at the state of the economy and economic outlook. Just to give you a bit of a background, economic development in Zimbabwe is expected to rebound 6% in 2025 from 1.7% in 2024, largely on account of a strong recovery in the agricultural sector following an above normal rainfall season. The agricultural sector is expected to grow by at least 21%. The country has achieved some measure of short-term macroeconomic stability, as shown by the low and short-term macroeconomic stability, as shown by the stable monthly inflation rates. This is largely on account of sustained tight monetary and fiscal policy stance. The economy has, however, still remained largely informal. Key findings of the 2023 economic census reveal that 76.1% of business establishments in Zimbabwe operate informally. High levels of informality limit the capacity of the state to sustainably mobilize domestic resources to finance development. The country has been experiencing some measure of macroeconomic stability. The monetary and fiscal authorities have maintained tight monetary and fiscal policy stance, resulting in some measure of exchange rate and policy stability. And on tonight's discussion, obviously, that is anchored towards the state of the economy during the first 9 months of the year, I have Dr. Prosper Chitambara from the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, LEDRIST, and he will help us unpack this very critical conversation. Dr. Chitambara, thank you very much for coming to ZFM Stereo and as usual, associating with us and partnering with us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to share thoughts on the state of the economy and the outlook.
Fantastic. Doc, to dive straight into the conversation, your overall thoughts on the state of the economy during the first half of the year. Is the economy headed in the right direction? And how can the government ensure sustained and inclusive growth going forward?
So my thoughts on the state of the economy for the first 9 months of the year are that we have seen a bit of improvement in terms of, say, tobacco production, in terms of gold production, in terms of even remittance inflows into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of positives. We have seen some measure of stability on the macroeconomy, mm-hmm. Short-term stability on account of the stance that the fiscal and mandatory reserve have actually adopted in terms of fiscal policy and mandatory conduct. The outlook is very positive in terms of the projected growth for this year of about 6%. I think there's consensus by both by multilateral partners, development partners, and also the local authorities that there's going to be a rebound in growth this year on account of a very good agricultural season that we had. So for tobacco, for example, that we've broken the record. We've set new records, actually, in terms of tobacco production. And the trends, I'm sure, will keep on improving, actually, because we're seeing a lot of our farmers, the smallholder farmers, are actually now doing tobacco because of the incentives the government has actually come up with. So the tobacco business is very, it's a very lucrative business, in my view. And for listeners that may want, they may be thinking of going into business, I think that's an opportunity. So the economy this year, I think it's so far all is well on the economic front. Because we then want to interrogate the quality of the growth to see whether it's creating jobs. I think that would be something else, and whether it's resulting in improved investments in sectors such as health, education, water and sanitation, infrastructure, even social protection. Because ultimately, if the economy is growing, we expect that the resources that are being generated must then be channeled towards sectors that enhance the competitiveness and the productivity of the economy. So in my view, that's what makes growth sustainable. For example, invest in irrigation as a way of building resilience in terms of our economy, as a way of climate proofing our economy. Invest in digital infrastructure as a way of taking advantage or leveraging and harnessing the power of artificial intelligence. So are we in the right direction? I think we seem to go in the right direction, because the concern probably is that maybe we may not be moving fast enough given the challenges that despite the challenges of high levels of poverty that we currently face, and the challenges of high levels of informal employment. Most people want jobs, and they want jobs like now.
When you speak about fast enough, it also, I'm thinking like an ordinary Zimbabwean, thinking the mantra, upper middle income by 2030.
Yeah, what does it mean?
What does it mean? And are we fast enough to catch up with that?
The numbers are telling a different story. Yes, we are making progress. So it's really about the pace of the progress, in my view. But for Zimbabwe to be an upper middle income economy by 2030, growth must not be less than 15% per year, according to the World Bank. And when we look at how we've fared over the last 10 years, our average economic growth rate has been 2.5%, which is a far cry from the 15% that we need to hit. That's the annum. So yes, we are happy that we are making progress, but we need to expedite things. We need to grow faster. We need to create more jobs. We need to invest more money in health, more money in education, more money in social protection. So, not to discourage the policymakers, I think we are moving, but we need to move faster.
Okay.
We are moving in the right direction, but we need to move faster.
Increase the pace.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I know in my background, I indicated that the country has achieved some measure of short-term macroeconomic stability, as shown by the low, stable monthly inflation rates. Doc, what is causing this, and what does it mean to the citizen, and can this be sustained when we see monthly inflation rates coming down?
I think that's a positive development, and it's been caused largely by the tight fiscal mandate policies on the part of the Minister of Finance, but also on the part of the Central Bank. Because when you look at the key drive in any economy, I would say the biggest driver of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods, in other words, in liquidity or money supply, unsustainable growth in money supply. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to address that, then you've solved your inflationary problems. And what we've seen, for example, the Ministry of Finance is assumed, has cleaned up the balance sheet of the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen, for example, the payment of the 25% surrender requirements is now being done through the normal tax revenues from the Ministry of Finance and not from the central bank. So that was one of the biggest channels for money creation, mandate creation, which was causing inflation. Because
mm-hmm.
I know a number of exporters may be complaining that the government, the Ministry of Finance hasn't paid them yet in terms of surrender requirements. Because now government has to use the resources that they are getting from taxes to pay that surrender requirement. But in my view, that has really helped. Because what was happening in the past was that central bank was literally creating money to finance the 25% surrender requirement. Mm-hmm. So it was creating too much liquidity into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Ministry of Finance has also admitted that government is overcontracted in terms of the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's also creating problems. But of course, they're trying to manage the cash flows associated with that. But a number of service providers obviously are not happy because they've not been, some of them have not been paid for a very long period of time.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, but we are also seeing that some infrastructure projects that have been stopped, like the Lorraine Drive, I think they're now being done.
Which they're moving.
Yeah, they're now moving, yeah. Yeah, so it probably be paid. Which I think is good. So I think now what we need to do is to ensure, so in terms of short-term stability, I think we've been able to achieve that. But we now must focus on long-term stability, long-term inflation. So annual inflation rate, for example, the numbers are still on the very high side, more than 80% annual year-on-year inflation.
Mm-hmm.
We are hoping that those numbers will come down, because annual inflation rate, that's the proxy or indicator for long-term stability in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Monthly inflation rate, that's the indicator or the proxy for short-term stability.
Mm-hmm.
So short-term stability has been attained, but we are yet to attain long-term stability, which is typified by low and stable annual inflation. When I say low and stable, we must be able to maintain below 10%. So we did a bit of number crunching. So for Zimbabwe, our optimal inflation rate is around 8% per annum.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to sustain about 8% inflation rate, maybe for a year, for 2 years.
For the ordinary Zimbabwe, what does that mean?
So when you say inflation rate is 8%, what that really means is that on average, on a year-on-year basis, prices have increased by about 8%. So, for example, if bread was costing $1 last year,
mm-hmm.
so this year it has increased to $1.08.
Mm-hmm.
It is fairly stable. It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what basically it means. You are measuring changes in prices over a yearly basis or even on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So if our monthly inflation rate is 8%, it means if bread was $1 last month, this month is now, it has increased to $1.08.
Mm-hmm.
That's a month-on-month or inflation rate, yeah. So 8% is optimal. So inflation doesn't have to be too low, but also it must not be too high.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes too low, it means there's lack of aggregate demand.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Japan, they've suffered from negative inflation for a long time. What it's called, the liquidity trap.
What are the implications?
Number one, it means households are not buying enough, but also businesses are not investing a lot. So there's low aggregate demand in the economy.
Hmm.
There's lack of confidence by economic agents, by households, and by the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Japanese government has done in the past was to give companies subsidies to produce. Literally give them money, cheap money,
mm-hmm.
without charging any interest. as a way of incentivizing them to produce.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're trying to kickstart the economy. So you're pouring liquidity into the economy,
mm-hmm.
because aggregate demand is investments, consumption, on the low side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, in my view, that's a better problem than the extreme, than the hyperinflation. Because hyperinflation, you can't even do anything in hyperinflation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You see the empty shelves, what we experienced in the past in 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is still when inflation is low, there's a lack of demand, but this companies are still producing, even though there are very few people that are able to buy or that are willing to buy.
Fantastic. This is Business Unusual, and I'm your host, Anes Masambu. I am focusing on the state of the economy during the first 9 months of the year, and I have in studio Dr. Prosper Chitambara from the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. We know that the economic growth in Zimbabwe is expected to rebound to 6% in 2025 from 1.7% in 2024, and this is largely on account of a strong recovery in the agricultural sector following an above normal rainfall season. Dr. Chitambara, government is in the process of reviewing taxes, regulations, licenses, regulatory fees, with the aim of improving the doing business environment. Your comment on this, so there are a lot of cabinet resolutions coming out.
My thoughts are that I think that's a very positive development. That's one of the things that we've been advocating for, making it easier for businesses to do business by reducing the regulatory burden, the licensing burden. Of course, government has adopted a more gradualist approach. Some were advocating for a big bang approach. So government is doing it on a sector by sector basis,
mm-hmm.
which I think is critical, which I think is better than the big bang approach. But in my view is that it must be extended to also include tax reforms, direct income tax reforms.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tax burden is also very, very high. So the tax burden in Zimbabwe in general is one of the highest, and not just on the African continent, but also in the world. For example, there's a report that was published last year from the Chamber of Mines, which revealed that the effective tax rate in the mining sector is around 66% in Zimbabwe, higher than DRC at 61%, higher than South Africa at 44%, higher than Zambia at 55%. Look at the fuel sector. Zimbabwe is the third most expensive fuel on the African continent. Why? Because 40% of the price of fuel per liter is going to government and government agencies, MDAs,
mm-hmm.
no taxes, levies, and other charges. Yeah. So yes, what government is doing in terms of easing the regulatory burden and reducing fees is critical, but we also need to digitize the doing business environment itself,
mm-hmm.
digitize government itself,
mm-hmm.
So that just you minimize face-to-face interactions, and you also enhance public service delivery.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, for you to effectively do that, you also need to continue to invest in digital infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
But most countries are going digital. Singapore is a classic example.
Mm-hmm.
So in Singapore, to get a business license, it takes less than a day.
Wow.
Because everything is done online.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to physically go to Singapore. You can actually process everything online.
Wherever you are.
Yeah, wherever you are. As long as you have the money. And get your license in less than a day. Because Rwanda is also a good, another classic example.
Yeah, here in Africa.
Fully embracing the digital economy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's also digitize our systems as a way of enhancing efficiency and reducing and improving service delivery. But one of the biggest problems in Zimbabwe is the inefficiencies which are costing us. So Zimbabwe has a huge inefficiency gap. Yes, for example, in terms of public investment, for every dollar that we invest, we lose more than half through inefficiencies, according to the African Development Bank.
And
so that's a big number. If you invest a dollar, it means you're losing through inefficiencies, half, more than half.
What lessons can Zimbabwean economy draw from? We want to use a context that is here in sub-Saharan Africa, Rwanda. What lessons can we draw from that, from the economy?
Rwanda, one of the lessons rather they've implemented doing ease of doing business forms, also harnessing the AI, the digital economy. And that's one of the key lessons that we can learn from Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's in the health sector, whether it's in the doing business environment, I think they are leveraging the digital economy. They're leveraging the artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
My other lesson, I was inspired by Ethiopia. So Ethiopia, a few weeks back or a few days back, they launched their grant, Ethiopian recognizes
dam. That dam, that's
the biggest hydroelectric.
Although it's controversial between
Egypt. Yes. Now, I'm inspired by how they financed that project. It's with zero external financing.
Coming. Starting from as far as 2011.
Yes. Yeah. But they did it exclusively using Ethiopian resources. No cent from the World Bank or from America or from the U.S. or from Europe. As it's purely done by Ethiopians or Ethiopians.
And definitely to improve power generation. That
country is now so sufficient in terms. They cannot even export to other countries now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you see how development will even improve now that they have energy, uninterrupted energy supply.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they are saying that Ethiopia is now the Dubai of Africa.
Wow.
If it became the Dubai of Africa before this dam, now that they have this dam, it means they are even going to do better. But I think Zimbabwe can learn a lesson from how Ethiopia has done, has financed that project, that mega project.
Indeed, definitely top.
Yeah.
And Doc, I want to come to the social protection aspect. Ultimately, we can talk about the economy, but it was really not the ordinary citizen who is in Mabuku, who is in Domboshava, etc. We know that according to the 2025 midterm review budget and economic review, interest on debt servicing during the first 6 months of the year amounted to 2.5 million ZIG, of which 1.2 billion was paid on external debts, while 1.3 was channeled towards domestic debt payment. On the other hand, government spent 3.5 billion on social protection. Are we winning the war against poverty? How can we ensure that we translate the positive economic growth that we've been mentioning, about 6%, into tangible welfare benefits for the ordinary citizen and the workers?
And the war against poverty is a very arduous battle, and the numbers are still in terms of Zimbabweans living in extreme poverty are still on the high side. Almost about 40% of Zimbabweans are living in extreme poverty. And government was aiming to reduce that number to about 10% by end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the target under the NDS 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a reduction, but I'm not sure whether it's going to be below 10%. Because when you don't feel it when you move around. I think there's still a lot of challenges, a lot of desperation, mental health issues. I think poverty reduction has been a very slow journey.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for Zimbabwe, by the way, but for Africa in general. So Africa is the only continent where the number of poor citizens have actually been increasing. In the rest of the continents, the proportion of the poor has actually been going down.
Oh.
But Africa alone, out of the seven continents, so in Africa where the number of poor people are actually increasing.
Where are the wheels falling off?
So for Africa, it's really a number of reasons. One of some of them relating to issues of illicit financial corruption, I would say.
So Zimbabwe also falls into that?
Zimbabwe being in Africa and Zimbabwe being a typical African economy, we are also affected by that.
Wow.
Ultimately, because what corruption then does is that resources that were supposed to be used for production are now being used for rent-seeking and non-productive.
Wow.
So one of the biggest problems in Africa is the problem of corruption. Not just in Zimbabwe, but Africa in general.
Mm.
So on average, corruption is like a 20% tax on doing business. which imposes a 20% premium on doing business.
Wow. that is where you point out that you need to also digitalize and do it with the human interface.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
But remember, still remember Thabo Mbeki saying that, lamenting to a president, the former president, that South African businesses were being asked to give rights to Zimbabwean ministers before they get receiving a license.
Mm-hmm.
Mugabe actually said that at one point.
Wow.
So that, but the issue of corruption is it's a cancer.
And this is true.
Of course, not just government corruption, but even in the private sector, at all levels of society.
And this is choking.
Now, corruption, because corruption is so commonplace that it seems like it's normal to be corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
It's now like the norm. Both people are now used to it. Paying a bribe to get a service. Just oiling someone's pounds to expedite certain things.
This is a direct hit on the economy.
Yeah. It makes it more expensive to do business. And investments, foreign direct investments, actually slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Because investors also need to budget maybe for a 10% bribe in order to get a license. So they shy away from Africa or from
doing business with any specific economy or government.
And it's difficult to address corruption. Because I've written a paper on that, but once corruption is now the norm, it's difficult to then orientate people's minds. But it's now the expectation.
And coming together, creating a social contract where we need to get out of that can be very difficult.
It can be difficult. Of course, they've done it in countries like Singapore, Malaysia, China, of course. But China, it's also because of the strong disincentives. That if you are convicted of corruption, it's capital punishment.
In Zimbabwe.
But for Asia, they've been more successful in terms of their anti-corruption agenda than Africa.
I can't shy away to the fact that Zimbabwe corruption is choking the economy.
That is choking.
And it's having a direct hit on the ordinary citizen.
Yes.
Maybe just quickly from, obviously you've indicated that you've written a position paper. What needs to be done so that we get out of this? We want to be an upper middle income economy by 2030, and we need to match that 15% rate. With that, so corruption, we won't get there.
Number one, it starts with having strong institutions. Because corruption thrives in an environment where institutions are weak, or even they are captured. We've seen in countries like South Africa, where one family was actually able to capture the whole state, the Gupta family.
Mm-hmm.
But when institutions are strong now, it's more difficult to capture the state institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So the institutional reform, that's why there's a scholar at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, two scholars actually wrote a book called Why Nations Fail.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did specific case studies of Africa. And actually found out that nations fail because corrupt institutions that are supposed to support the development have been captured by a few individuals. In most cases, these individuals are politically exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So institutions, it's very important, whether they're economic institutions but also political institutions. We need strong, independent and accountable institutions that are beyond reproach.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, what we talked about, the issue of the digitizing, the commerce, government, businesses in general, I think that's also very critical.
Mm-hmm.
Make it easier for people to solicit bureaucrats to solicit for bribes. But also come up with strong, that's also institutional, come up with strong disincentives to punish corrupt behavior. And that's what. So Asia actually ticks the box. Asia as a continent, or even a country like China, actually ticks ticks the boxes in terms of all those three institutions. Digital. So in China, like even how they do their policing. So everywhere you go, it's almost like there's a camera everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's actually watching you as you go about your day to day.
Whatever
you're doing.
And we can adopt that too.
Yeah. Even on the roads. And so that's why crime rate in China is very low.
Mm.
But if you commit a crime, they'll be able to identify you very quickly. Mm. So that is also helps to instill discipline.
Mm.
So that's the digital economy that we're talking about.
And that discipline, we need it in Zimbabwe as soon as possible.
Yeah, we need it.
How urgent is it?
Very, very urgent. We need it like yesterday. But corruption, the nature of family corruption reforms is that when you look at the political economy of corruption reforms, so there are strong vested interests that will always fight those kind of reforms.
Mm-hmm.
That's why even in countries where the leader is come up with such strong anti-corruption measures, that leader, in some cases, you cannot even be killed by people that stage to lose from the process of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So anti-corruption reforms by their nature are very difficult to implement.
Extremely difficult.
Yeah. But the same things like digitizing, those ones are easier to do.
Digitizing has also helped countries like Rwanda.
Rwanda, exactly. Singapore. Asia is a very classic example.
Fantastic. I know we've touched onto a question that I'm going to come, let's move towards another key aspect that is critical, has been critical in terms of social protection. Let's talk about remittances.
Yes.
How significant, we've seen a significant improvement in remittances from the diaspora. How can remittances be leveraged to harness to finance development in the country, obviously in terms of also contributing towards economic growth?
And remittances, in my view, can actually play a critical role in terms of bridging the financing gap. So Zimbabwe has a huge financing gap. Just in terms of roads and hard infrastructure, roads, electricity, we have a financing gap of about $5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Means we need to be investing an additional $5 billion every year for the next 10 years to close the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the diaspora can also come in. Through, for example, diaspora bonds. We have seen countries like Nigeria, even Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a good example. Asian countries, they've actually been able to issue diaspora bonds. In other words, they're actually borrowing from, say, Zimbabwe. There are more than 3 million Zimbabweans in the diaspora. So if we could harness maybe just 1 million of them, and each one actually lends us, say, $100. So that's how diaspora bonds actually works out. Means we'll be able to mobilize some resources that we can use immediately to finance, maybe. So the diaspora bonds, number of countries have actually been using the costs from diaspora bonds to invest in infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the diaspora could actually play a critical role, but of course they need to be incentivized. One of the areas, when you talk to them, one of the areas is the issue of voting in the countries where they are living. Further, our constitution says that they must come to vote here, but other countries, they allow their citizens to vote from wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Then the clarity around the dual citizenship issue, of course the constitution now provides for that. So those are some of the political incentives that when you talk to diasporans, they are concerned about.
Yes, that's why I wanted to follow up and say, I follow a lot of conversations with the diaspora. Diaspora is a bit skeptical about coming and investing
in Zimbabwe. Yeah, and many of them are even investing where they are. Like if you go to South Africa, Zimbabwean friends in South Africa, they are even buying properties there. They're even saying it's cheaper to buy properties here than, say, in Zimbabwe. Yeah, so they're very skeptical in a number of them.
So Zimbabwean economy is missing out on an opportunity.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity.
And how can we harness this opportunity and at least boost confidence?
The beauty, I think we now have a diaspora desk within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, mm-hmm. International Trade. But part of the mandate of that desk must be to actually listen to some of the concerns and try to address those concerns.
Implement
those concerns. And make the diaspora feel that they are part and parcel of development. When crafting the NDS too, I'm sure there are going to be road shows, maybe to South Africa, to UK, where they also get inputs from Zimbabwe and the diaspora for the NDS too, which will run from 2026 to 2030. So the diasporans need to feel that they are part and parcel of even economic development.
I know, Dr. Shitambara, we keep on speaking about towards an empowered upper middle income society by 2030. But with this background, we know that Zimbabwe's debt situation remains an impediment to both external sustainability and economic development. The unsustainable stock of external debt has constrained access to concessional financing and to international markets, retarded economic growth, and hampered socio-economic development. The huge public debt stock has reduced the ability of both local and external resources for social spending. With this background, will it be easy to achieve that 2030 target?
It's going to be difficult. And like the Congress, the US Congress now is, they're trying to introduce, I think, a bill that will result in the removal of sanctions, but based on the payment of $3.5 billion within a year. And in my conversation with authorities, I think now they're trying to prioritize debt repayment. Of course, you know that that results in a crowding out of resources away from other critical sectors.
Yes, that's where I want to go. What sort of impact would that have?
So it's not just Zimbabwe, in fact. And the Norwegian Church Aid actually did a study 2 years ago, which actually found out that for every dollar of revenue that trickles into the coffers of an average low-income country, 40 cents is going toward debt repayment.
Wow.
That's the average for low-income countries. So the issue of debt is really affecting many countries. And debt repayment means 40% goes towards debt repayment. 40 cents for every dollar of revenue. This government is left only with 60 cents to use for investment and for paying of salaries, for investing in...
And that's where we see other social protection areas being neglected.
So most countries have actually, most countries in Africa are in debt distress.
Let's come to Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is also in debt distress. Debt distress basically means that you're failing to service your debt. And you know, the best way of addressing the debt problem is just make sure that your economy is growing by more than the rate, the interest rate on your debt. So if you assume that Zimbabwe, we are paying 13% on our interest, so just grow by at least 13%.
Just that.
But of course, it's easier said than that. So if you grow by 15%, means within probably 5 to 10 years, we would have achieved debt sustainability. So now government, I think government is now issuing title deeds on family, which is positive. I think the view also is to move resources to then defray that $3.5 billion compensation. It's now very clear that for Zimbabwe to have normal relations with the West, that money has to be paid.
One way or the other.
Otherwise, we'll always be stigmatized in the national financial market. So I'm sure Professor Mthuli is in a very difficult situation. Was trying to balance that also. Of course, we can refuse to pay the debt. But now they're doing debt pay repayment. But other countries have repudiated. They've said no, I'm not going to pay because it's odious debt. But of course, the West will, we have to pay a price for sanctions. So I'm sure our government doesn't want to go that route. Because if Zimbabwe were to be sanctioned, it would be difficult even to do international business. but it would be blocked out of international even payment systems. Because we may use the BRICS payment platform, but I think it takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think the issue of compensation, government is trying to prioritize that, I think. Maybe they'll use part of the funds from the title deeds to finance the compensation.
And Doc, speaking of BRICS, is it an opportunity for Zimbabwe
I think
considering the players that are in BRICS?
I think we just need to be strategic and focus on not just to east, west, but be strategic in terms of how you do business. Try to strengthen the local capacity of Zimbabwean businesses to be able to compete even with the BRICS countries.
Mm-hmm.
Because competition with BRICS is even more severe, because the BRICS countries are very, very advanced in terms of, say, manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Highly competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like China, the most competitive economy in the world. Even the American economy can't compete with China.
Mm-hmm.
No economy can compete with China. Their unit costs are very, very low.
Extremely
low. Labor costs are probably the lowest because of the huge population.
And obviously, I've seen they've adopted technologies.
That is able to reduce the costs. So I think our management in Zimbabwe, we need to enhance productivity and competitiveness. But whether we're competing with the BRICS or even with the West, we are in a very strong position to compete sustainably and competitively.
Mm-hmm.
So our bet is about competitiveness. And Zimbabwe, he has a huge competitiveness gap on account of the high unit costs. Unit costs in Zimbabwe are on the very high side, so that affects our competitiveness. So we can't effectively compete even with Zambia, with the countries in the region,
mm-hmm.
because the costs in Zimbabwe are on the higher side, which is what government is addressing now, part of what government is trying to address.
Mm-hmm. Starting off just with that.
Yeah, so whether we are dealing with trading or with the BRICS or with the West, ultimately, we must be competitive for us to be able to meaningfully benefit from that partnership.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And as we come towards the end of our show, Doc, what economic fine-tuning and institutional reforms would you like to see to make more economy to make the economy sustainable and stable and for businesses to thrive going forward?
I think number one, our parastatals, state-owned enterprises, they need to, the reform needs to be expedited there, because they remain a major drag to the fiscus.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might need, of course, they are now under Mutapa Investment Fund, but we need to probably privatize some or part privatize. Allow the private players to come on board. Yeah, so that's one area, the parastatal reform, in my view, we need to prioritize that. Of course, I have to applaud government for the... I know it's very... views are very mixed in terms of whether people should be given title deeds on land.
Mm-hmm.
But in my view, I think it's... we need a land market. I think, and for you to harness the full potential of land, you must give people title to the land.
Exactly.
Some argue that that could result in a reversal of the land reform, but we can always put checks and balances to address that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have to applaud government for that title deed program. I think that's one of the best institutional reforms by this present government. Then, of course, the doing business reforms, that's also part of the institutional reform agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that need to be expedited rather, or quickened, if you are to reap more benefits in terms of sustained growth and development.
Fantastic. And I want to give this background before I throw in one of my final questions. We know that ensuring poor and inclusive economic growth requires that people and their needs come first implying a human rights strategy to development. That's the prioritization of people and their basic needs, such as healthcare, education, housing, and infrastructure, should occupy pride of place in the national budget. The country's health sector continues to face a myriad of challenges that include inadequate and depleted healthcare workforce, a high disease burden. We know cancer, Zimbabwe is one among the highest ill-equipped hospitals, prohibitive cost of emergency and specialist services, with a lack of decentralization of such services and inadequate public spending, among others. Here I throw in my question, Doc. The 2026 budget will be presented in November, which is very soon. What are your expectations?
Well, now, with expectations around, number one, we need to get an update in terms of the progress that we've made. You mentioned health, for example. So Zimbabwe, we introduced the sugar tax as a way of financing healthcare, in particular the procurement of cancer machines, the dialysis machines. So we need to get an update in terms of how those resources have actually been utilized, which hospitals have benefited, what impact that has had in terms of our health outcomes. Because health, in my view, is very critical. Because except the population is healthy, they can't be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are no one ahead from figures from Zimbra that government is getting quite a significant chunk amount of resources from that levy, even the health levy itself, but also from the sugar tax.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the minister will be able to. I think that's critical in terms of enhancing accountability and transparency.
Mm-hmm.
But also getting probably by November, I think we would have moved a bit in terms of the doing business reform agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So also get an update in terms of what achievements have been made. Of course, we know in agriculture already there's some pronouncements that have been done.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's now been effected, whether the necessary legal instruments have been put in place to give effect to some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless and until statutorized maybe, then it can be affected.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the issue of the, someone saying that the parking fees were reduced but on the ground, I think I'm not sure whether now that has now been implemented, but on the ground, I think the reduction had not been implemented. So I think that requires some kind of legal instrument.
Such an instrument,
yes. Yeah, but also, budgeting is basically about revenues and expenditures. So I'm also interested to see how much government is allocating to even to health, even to social protection, to education, in line with the regional and the national benchmarks that Zimbabwe has already acceded to. Yeah, so those are some of the expectations.
You point out to education that financing towards education, but we continue to see a myriad of challenges in that sector, which is
dropout
very rates, critical.
Yeah, yeah. Some even not transitioning to grade 7, Form 1 from grade 7. Yeah.
How can government deal with that situation?
So for education, government is coming up currently with a school financing policy for education, which seeks to address some of the challenges in terms of sustainable resource mobilization
mm-hmm.
for the education sector.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't been launched yet, but it's, I think, now all being finalized.
Mm-hmm.
So now, well, once the policy is now there, it has to be implemented through the national budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of the biggest problems for Zimbabwe is that we come up with so many policies, but in terms of implementing, I think we lack implementation capacity or bureaucratic capacity to effectively implement policies.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many beautiful policies that are actually sure of kind of being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Strengthening implementation capacity or bureaucratic capacity, technical capacity and bureaucracy is very important to ensure that we implement a lot of the policies that we've come up with in the past.
Dr. Shambara, your final words, transitioning from 2025 to 2026, what would you want to see for Zimbabwe's economy?
I mean, the outlook is quite positive. For example, in terms of the weather, the rainfall, I think we're expecting a normal season to above normal season.
Yes, but I've been reading somewhere that there might be some cyclones.
Yes. It's in the southern parts.
Yes.
The northern parts may not receive as much rainfall. Yeah. So it actually means that government is at various stages of completing dam projects. So that's critical. But also extending, government set very ambitious targets for extending irrigation, land under irrigation. I'm not sure whether we'll be able to hit that target, but irrigation is the most important thing that we need to be doing as a country. Extending irrigation. Currently, only about 15% of land is under irrigation, arable land. So we need to, if we can reach 50%, it means Zimbabwe becomes food secure.
Indeed.
Yeah. So irrigation, I think that's the smartest way of subsidizing the economy through investing in irrigation. Subsidizing farmers rather. Invest in irrigation. Not necessarily give them seeds. Yes, it's important to give seeds to those that are very indigent. But make sure that they have irrigation support or capacity to be able to even continue farming even during a drought season.
Fantastic. Inspired, obviously, by the Ethiopian Jade Project. I'd like to even have more conversations around that center. In Zimbabwe, how can Zimbabwe can harness projects of that nature in terms of making sure that we are food self-sufficient?
As long as there is will, I think that's the key story for Ethiopia. I think they're able to believe in the vision of their leader, Ahmed, and they're able to make contributions, even at our sort level. Mm-hmm. So it means they believe in the vision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Bible says that where there's no vision, the people perish.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the issue of unit becomes very critical in my view. Zimbabweans need to be more united. Because as long as people are more united, it means people feel that they are part and parcel of what's happening. Yeah, but I think we are getting there.
Where there is no vision, the people perish. That was the voice of Dr. Prosper Chitambara from the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. Ladies, we were looking at the state of the economy during the first 9 months of the year. Dr. Chitambara, thank you very much for coming through and talking to us here at ZFM Stereo, and as usual, partnering with you as Ladies.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure. We look forward to more enriching conversations
definitely
in the foreseeable future.
Definitely, we need to look and delve into the dam projects. Inspired by Ethiopia, and obviously, we will continue the conversations. From me, your host, Anes Masambu, and my guest, Dr. Prosper Chitambara, it's been a pleasure. We will continue to engage you on more issues from economy, social protection, and macro and economic stability issues in Zimbabwe, from the debt situation. But for now, it's good night. Zvipatara zvinoshanda nevashandi vanopara kugara pakanaka tozvibata sei mwana weZimbabwe ngatibatane mukusha ndiyo kodzero yedu ndiyo kodzero yedu ngativagara mangwana revana tichiumba rusvingo reZimbabwe toishanda sei toivakane mwana weZimbabwe ngatibatane mukusha ndiyo kodzero yedu ndiyo kodzero yedu ngatibatsirane mukuvaka Zimbabwe ine mabasa akanaka, zvikoro, zvipatara nemishonga yakakwana, dzimba, mvura yakachena, magetsi nekuchengetedzeka kwemunhu wese. Zimbabwe ine mukoho muminda nemaindastri ari kukura nekuenderera mberi. Ngatiise musoro pamwe chete tivake nyika inonzwika ine mikana isina nzara kana nhamo. Mashoko aya munoaunzirwa neve Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe.